In this age of the smartphone, there's an app for nearly everything. Some useful, some frivolous. I found one for the total eclipse of the sun called Solar Eclipse Timer, and it's amazing. As is its creator, meet Gordon Telepin, plastic surgeon and eclipse expert. It's all new and all blue. Join us. Welcome to Blue Dot, Public Radio's most engaging science program. I'm your host, Dave Schlom. I forget how I ran into the Eclipse Timer app, but when I did, I figured what the heck, and I downloaded it. Would it be useful for me as I experience my first ever solar eclipse on August 21st, or just a distraction? I was amazed at how user-friendly and just plain useful it was, but then even more intrigued once I found out about its creator, Dr. Gordon Telepin. His day job is being a plastic surgeon in Decatur, Georgia, which is pretty demanding work. How did this guy create this amazing smartphone app? Let's find out together in my conversation with him. Gordon Telepin, welcome to Blue Dot.
Thank you, Dave. It's a pleasure to be here. I really want to thank you right from the beginning for this opportunity, because I've listened to your show, and I know you've interviewed some really amazing scientists and very interesting people, and I feel privileged to be a part of it. So thank you very much.
Well, you're welcome. I'm glad to have you. As the saying goes, there's an app for that. But until you came along, there really wasn't an app for solar eclipses. Tell me, what led you to develop this?
Sure. There are a couple of other little eclipse-related apps out there that do different things, but there's nothing quite like what my app does for the general public for this eclipse. Because there's a lot of depth to my app, but part of it is for the average person with a smartphone that wants to enjoy, this eclipse, but doesn't quite know how to do it. Because my app will talk the observer through the eclipse, literally. I mean, that's what it does. And the history actually starts back in 2001, when my wife and I went to our first eclipse in Africa. I wanted to take great pictures of that eclipse, and I actually modeled my plan after Fred Espenick. And I loved your interview with him, by the way. And so my wife and I practiced our photography plan down to the minor details in our living room, while watching a video of one of Espenick's totality movies. And I would play that loud on the TV, and I would practice the photography plan with the excitement of totality happening, because I wanted it to be realistic. I wanted to not be distracted by the event. But the thing is, there is nothing you can do in advance to prepare yourself for the actual event if it's your first eclipse. In the last 5 minutes before totality, your senses are totally overwhelmed. The drop in temperature, the change in lighting, the crickets going crazy, the crowd excitement, and then the darkness during totality. So our photography plan, even though we practiced like crazy, almost fell apart. And I realized right then, after that totality, standing in a field in Africa, that you cannot do an eclipse looking at your watch, that somebody had to develop a timer specifically designed for timing a total solar eclipse. So that's what I did. When I got back to the States, I found a programmer and started to work on the first timer that was dedicated for solar eclipses. And the priorities were that you had to be able to set it in advance, and it had to have five times that you could program in: C1, C2, C3, C4, and maximum eclipse. But the main thing and the unique thing is that it had to talk to you. It had to count down. It had to warn you about events. So you didn't have to look at your watch. So you could look at the eclipse, you could look at your camera gear, you could do whatever you wanted, but you didn't have to look at your watch. And at that point, it ran on Windows 98 and Windows Pocket PC, because that was in 2001 and 2002. So it was kind of interesting. Back in those days, I had two ways to get the original program, talking timer, into people's hands. There were already two online stores for downloading programs for Pocket PC, or I would physically mail a CD-ROM to the person with the installation disk for Windows 98. And it was interesting. I was in communication with Fred Espinick way back then, and I actually mailed him a CD with my program on it. But, you know, by that time, Fred had already been to over 15 eclipses, I think, and he had his routine down. So he didn't really need the help of my program, and he probably doesn't even remember getting it. But for me, him being kind of my idol for eclipse photography, it was fun to communicate with him. So now we had a working talking timer. So we went back to Africa in 2002 for our next eclipse. We used Solar Eclipse Timer there for our group, and it worked great, except that we still had to calculate the contact times manually based on that bulletin that Fred would release for each eclipse. And so our timing in 2002 was still about 5 seconds off. And 5 seconds is a lot when you're trying to do photography of an eclipse. So I didn't use my timer in 2006 because we did that eclipse on a cruise ship. And then you got to remember now that the first iPhones didn't get released to June of 2007. So all along from 2002, I was planning what I could do with my talking timer for 2017. But I had to let the smartphone technology sort out. And basically it has, as you know now, so it's Apple or Android. So last summer I found a mobile device programmer, and I redesigned and redeveloped Solar Eclipse Timer for 2017. And it is so much more powerful, you know, than what we had in 2002. And then, of course, smartphones have GPS geolocation, you know, which is a game changer.
Well, let's talk about some basics. So you mentioned the Cs, C1, C2, C3. What do those mean?
Sure. So an eclipse is timed by the four contact times. So first contact, or C1, is when the moon is moving towards the sun and it first touches it. It first takes its little bite out of it. C2 is when the moon then moves across the face of the sun and completely obscures it, and you're in totality at C2. And C3 is when the moon just moves off the face of the sun and the sun is allowed to peek back out on the other side, and you're out of totality. It gets instantly bright. And then C4 marks the official kind of end of the eclipse, when the moon moves completely off of the face of the sun. So those are crucial times to know exactly. And it's also nice to know the midpoint between second contact and third contact, so you know where you're basically in the middle of totality. So if there's things you want to accomplish with observing the eclipse in a certain way, or photographing the eclipse in a certain way, you know that you're halfway through and you better get your chores done so you can observe it and enjoy it with your eyes.
Let's do a little eclipse primer on what you see and when, starting with C1. And then the really cool things like the diamond ring effect and Bailey's beads. Talk about what causes those things and when you see them.
Sure.
And how the app warns you to look out for those things.
Absolutely. So C1 is actually just a mark in time, and you don't actually see anything. You have to wait at least a few seconds, or 10 seconds to a minute, to physically start to see the bite of the moon out of the sun. So it's very exciting at C1, and people like to mark that time, and it's the beginning of the eclipse. But then C1 to C2 takes a long time. Now, it depends on where you're positioned in the country, but it's going to be about an hour and a half for the moon to move across the face of the sun until you get very close to C2. Then it gets really exciting. When you're within 5 minutes before C2, it's crazy exciting. The crowd can sense it. The light has already changed. Crickets are going crazy in the background if you're in a natural environment, because they think that night is coming. The temperature has dropped. And then right before C2, the sun is a very fine sliver, a very fine crescent of sun. So the next thing you look for, and it's very exciting, and you don't see it every eclipse, and you don't even see it at every observing location, is shadow bands. When that little slit of sun is coming through the atmosphere, the scientists don't know the exact reason for it, but the that slit lamp of light gets bent by the atmosphere and causes rippling shadows on the ground around you. And it's a wonderful event. I saw them in 2002. But that's within about 60 minutes of C2. And then about 10 or 15 seconds before C2 is when the big diamond ring occurs, because the sun is about to be completely covered by the moon. And then the final little thing that happens is the Bailey's beads effect, whereas that last little bit of sunlight can actually come through the uneven limb of the surface of the moon, and the last little bits of light come between the valleys and the mountains of the side of the moon, the limb of the moon, and that's when you get Bailey's beads. And right after that, you're in totality, and it gets instantaneously dark. But it's not like night. It's more like 30 minutes or 35 minutes after sunset. But the interesting thing, Dave, and people are not prepared for this when they're doing photography, is your eyes are not dark adapted. I mean, you've slowly become dark adapted, but it instantly gets very dark. And it looks darker to you because you're not dark adapted. So in the first 15 to 20 or 25 seconds of totality, it's hard to see your watch. It's even hard to see your camera gear until your eyes get used to the darkness a little bit. So it's very exciting, very challenging. And the reason Solar Eclipse Timer helps the normal observer and certainly the photographer at C2 is if you want to get good pictures of the diamond ring and Bailey's beads, like Fred Espenick is so expert at getting, you have to have exact timing and you have to anticipate those events. All of that happens over about 10 or 12 seconds. And if you're late, you've missed it. So if you want to get good pictures of those events, you have to be anticipating the time and clicking your shutter going into the time. After the time, it's too late. And the same thing happens at C3. You have to anticipate C3 and be clicking your shutter into C3 and going out of C3 if you want to catch Bailey's beads going out and the diamond ring. So timing is key, and that is what is great about Solar Eclipse Timer in the new version, and what I still had problems with in 2002, because, you know, we had to manually enter our times. We did not have GPS geolocation.
Well, let's talk about that, the basic features of the app. It uses GPS, so it will locate your phone wherever it is, right?
Correct.
And so you can set it for wherever you are, and it will tell you whether you're in the path of totality. Like if it doesn't have a C2 and C3 times, that's telling you you're not in the path of totality. Correct?
That's correct. And that's a little bit confusing for people who are getting the app, because, you know, people download an app and they immediately start, you know, tapping on buttons. So I've been doing a lot of support for people. So the entire United States is going to see a partial eclipse. So anywhere you are in the United States, if you use my app and geolocate, you'll get a calculation for C1 and C4, but you will not get a calculation for C2 and C3 because you're not in the path of totality. And if you're not in the path, the app will not even let you load the contact times into the main contact time timers, because the app really requires C2 in the sequence of all of the announcements to tell you what to do and when to do it. So yes, geolocation works throughout the whole country, but you only get 4 contact times if you're in the path of totality. And you can play with it. You can enter appropriate longitude and latitude into the timer GPS data field manually and look at your contact times for your observing position, but you can't do it automatically until you're in the path on eclipse day, or if you're lucky enough to live in the path right now.
You're listening to Blue Dot. I'm Dave Schlum. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with the creator of the Solar Eclipse Timer app, Gordon Telepin. Stay with us. And we're back talking to Dr. Gordon Telepin. He's a plastic surgeon and eclipse chaser, and he created the Solar Eclipse Timer app for smartphones.
What will you see looking at the horizon?
Oh, that's a beautiful part of an eclipse, Dave. So you have to picture what's happening. When you're in the shadow, you are standing in the middle, if you're on the center line, but basically you're standing in the middle of a 70-mile in diameter shadow. But the sunlight is lighting the perimeter of the shadow all the way around you. So all the way around you, your horizon looks like it's a colorful sunset. And it's beautiful to observe, especially if you're observing in a flat area. And a lot of people forget to do that because the eclipse itself is so awe-inspiring that people are either looking directly up at it, or they're enjoying the moment with their friends, or they're taking photography. And they forget just to take a moment and spin around and look at the horizon and maybe take a video or a picture of the horizon. So my app reminds you to do that right after mid-eclipse. Just take 5 or 10 seconds to spin around and appreciate a 360-degree lit horizon, because you're standing in the middle of that shadow.
And it's you that's talking to us through this whole thing, right?
That's correct. Unfortunately, a lot of people are going to have to hear my voice.
Well, I'm imagining, if a lot of people have the app, they'll hear Gordon, all these phones with your voice talking to us at the same time, telling us to look at the horizon. It's pretty funny.
I know. It's crazy.
I've got an imaginary scenario for you. Okay.
Sure.
Let's imagine we've got two users. I'm going to call them Steph and Lily. And Steph's okay. Just a family guy. He's never seen an eclipse before. He just wants to take his family, but he wants to fully enjoy it. So he downloads the app, but he's a newbie. But he just wants to enjoy the experience. Now, Lily, on the other hand, she's a veteran eclipse chaser, and she's a fantastic photographer. She wants to get the ultimate set of eclipse photographs of the Great American Eclipse. So let's talk about the family guy, Steph, first. What was he going to get out of this app?
So Steph and his family have to do just a little bit of pre-planning. I mean, they'll know from news reports or what they read in the newspaper or what's online where they need to get to get into the path of totality. So when they get in the path with their family and they're just going to observe it with their eyes, again, they geolocate. And they have all the times. So about a minute before first contact, I will tell them that first contact is going to happen, and it'll count down to first contact. So it's kind of like having a personal astronomer with you talking through the entire eclipse. Then the fun things are the partial phase phenomenon. You know, Dave, I'm a geek for the partial phase stuff. I love the things that change between C1 and C2. And a lot of people, if they learn about this eclipse really close to the eclipse, let's say a week before, are going to download the app, and they're not going to have a lot of time to research what happens with the partial phase phenomena. So my app reminds them to just observe for the changes in the ambient temperature at 45 minutes, 30 minutes, and 15 minutes before totality, before C2, because you will feel the temperature drop. I mean, I've logged it with a scientific data logger. At 10 minutes before totality, it tells you to observe for the changes in ambient lighting, because by that time, you'll start to see some changes in lighting. And 8 minutes before totality, it tells you to observe for the changes in animal behavior, because things will start to get dark enough at that point that if you're in a field where they're or a natural environment where there's going to be crickets, you're going to hear them. They're going to think nighttime is falling. So that's really fun for a family just to learn about the partial phase phenomena. And I have that in my help file in the app. So it's also an education process for them. But I guess the other big thing about it is then trying to see shadow bands right before C2, because those are very exciting. And for the average family who is just trying to observe this eclipse, I also have the reminder in the eclipse of in the timer of when it's safe to take your glasses off. So it announces glasses off right after C2, because you're in totality and it's safe then. And again, for the average family, it announces when to put your glasses back on. And I actually announced that two times, about 8 seconds before C3 as a preliminary announcement, and then again right after C2, because it's really important to tell novice eclipse chasers about eye protection.
And to take your glasses off when it's, you know, I can imagine a lot of people leaving their eclipse glasses on because they don't know to take them off and missing out.
Yeah. There has to be a lot of education about it. And so, like we already talked about, they'll be reminded to look at the horizon at mid-eclipse. And then after C3, it's another hour and a half between C3 and C4. And the casual observer might not even stay around for that, really. I think that may be more in the realm of photographers. But then it doesn't really do partial phases going between C3 and C4, because most people are not interested in that, or they're partying or just relaxing. But it will count down again to C4 and let you know when the eclipse is officially open. So that's how a normal family would just enjoy it.
Okay, let's talk about the veteran photographer, Lily. Why she want this app?
So Lily wants to take great pictures, and there's two ways that this app will help her. The main thing, I guess, is being able to anticipate going into C2, changing your shutter speeds to what you're going to use for capturing the diamond ring and capturing Bailey's beads, and taking your solar filter off early enough, which, you know, my app will make an announcement for 20 seconds before C2. And my plan is to pop my solar filters at 20 seconds before C2 and start popping my exposures for the diamond ring and Bailey's beads going into C2. So Lily will have perfect timing and an announcement that will let her plan when to take her solar filter off. And then during totality, she'll be reminded about Max Eclipse to make sure that she gets her photography work over with to enjoy the eclipse with her eyes. And then she'll be reminded about the horizon if she wants to take one or two wide angle images of the sunset horizon, always remembering not to use your flash then. And then it will have an announcement for 20 seconds going into C3, so that Lily will be reminded at 20 and 10 seconds going into C3 to start popping her exposures going out of C3 to catch Bailey's beads and the diamond ring going out before she puts her solar filter back on. And then you're reminded at 30 seconds after C3 to look again for shadow bands, because shadow bands can happen at that very fine crescent, both before totality and right after totality. And those are really fun to see. So that's how it helps. It helps the expert photographer get through totality with good timing.
And the shadow bands are an effect that you would see on the ground if it's light colored ground, or the sidewalk, or perhaps a garage door, something that's where you'll see those weird bands slithering across the surface.
That's correct. They're very faint. They're very low contrast. So you need to have a light colored surface. If you were watching this eclipse on an asphalt parking lot somewhere, you wouldn't see it, or a field with very dark glass. So when I give my lectures on eclipse photography, and what I've done in the past, is I tell people to bring a big white sheet and put it down in front of them, so if shadow bands occur, they do have a better opportunity to perhaps see them, because they are very faint and very low contrast.
One of the things I also want to point out is this all happens, your phone goes to sleep in its regular sleep mode, and then it reminds you to wake up the phone and when these things are happening. So you don't really have to mess with your phone very much.
That's correct. And Dave, that was a really important part of working out the programming for Solar Eclipse Timer for mobile devices, because of the sleep lock mode. We had to program going into the notification system in the operating system of these devices to make the app tell the user to wake up the phone. So it's the same notification system that you get when you get a text message or an email, and a little banner pops up on your phone and asks you to open the phone. And in our case, it asks you to open the phone because an eclipse event is coming up. So you don't want to miss the partial phase phenomenon because your phone went to sleep. And another programming detail that we had to work in was we didn't want the phone to go to sleep in the middle of totality. So we have flags in the program that force the phone to stay awake from about 3 minutes before totality till about 3 minutes after totality. So your phone will not go to sleep lock during that crucial phase of the event.
And that's only about 2 minutes.
That's correct. It's 2 minutes in on the West Coast. The point of greatest eclipse is in just outside of Hopkinsville, Kentucky, and that's 2 minutes and 40 seconds. And then it leaves the coast of South Carolina, only decreasing to about 2 minutes and 35 seconds. So we are very fortunate, you know, in this country to have an eclipse of that duration over a populated area with good roads and good communication, and a large amount of the population can experience their first eclipse without having to travel overseas.
Well, on that note, we're about out of time. So, Gordon Tullipin, thank you for sharing Solar Eclipse Timer with us. And do you have any one last pithy 10-second soundbite piece of advice for eclipse chasers this summer?
I just tell people to get to the path, and if they have any questions, my website has the extensive help file on it, and it also has parts of my lecture series on eclipse photography.
Great. Gordon, thanks.
Hey, thanks, Dave. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks to our guest, Dr. Gordon Tullipin. Before we go, I want to give a shout out to the cast and crew of Dinner Party Download. They came here to Lassen Volcanic National Park for a special event playing their Look Up and Listen program designed to be heard outdoors under the stars. I got to lead them on a hike, and it was great fun seeing the park through the eyes of hosts Brendan Francis Noonan and Rico Galliano as they experienced the volcanic landscape for the very first time. You can hear their show every Sunday evening at 6 right here on NSPR. Thanks as well to Kevin Sweeney and the Rangers and volunteers that put on a wonderful star party at Lassen Volcanic National Park right after the show. The stars of public radio beneath the stars of the Milky Way made for a memorable evening. Also, thanks to our hosts, Jillian and Joe at Mill Creek Resort. They took care of our entire Blue Dot crew while we were supporting the folks from American Public Media. Beautiful, peaceful, family-friendly, highly recommended as a base of operations to explore Lassen Park. Blue Dot is a production of North State Public Radio in Northern California. Check out this and past podcasts at mynspr.org, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcast groove on. Our communications coordinator is the amazing Casey Gardner. Our producer and engineer is Mr. Nolan Ford on the board. Blue Dot's theme music, Big Wave Dave, was composed and performed by Matt Schiltz of New York City. I'm your host, Dave Schlom, and as always, I remind you that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.